Welcome back. And first up this afternoon, we actually have continuing our theme on the future of corporate reporting and thinking about strategically where the financial reporting standards fit into the overall scope of corporate reporting. I'm very pleased that we have Bastian Buck here with us this afternoon to take us through and update us on the Global Reporting Initiative and where that is at. And I think that I'm sure that there will be questions afterwards around quite how that fits with the whole thing and where you see and where we might see international financial reporting standards fitting in terms of the whole of corporate reporting. So, with no further ado, I will pass over to Bastian to talk to us about the Global Reporting Initiative.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to speak to you. Within the next 15 to 20 minutes, I want to introduce briefly the organization that I represent, the Global Reporting Initiative, a fairly young organization, and what we have achieved in the last years. I also want to then explain a bit the context in which we see our standards, the standards on sustainability reporting, play with all the other developments in the corporate reporting landscape. And I understand that this has been the focus of debates that you had in past meetings. So for the organization, GRI, it was founded in the US in Boston in the late 90s. And since then, we have been relocated to the Netherlands, where we are a non-profit foundation. We have offices in Australia, Brazil, China, Colombia, India, South Africa, and the US. And we have a network of about 600 organizations that are members of our organization and support us on a yearly basis, as well as an established training network through which we promote our standards with 70 training partners delivering training in close to 100 locations around the globe. The main product and the main focus of our work is the development of our guidelines, the GRI reporting guidelines, and the process by which we do that is multi-stakeholder in nature. We have developed these guidelines through several iterations over the years, and it is not the Secretariat that is developing the guidelines. These guidelines are developed by international expert working groups on different issue areas in the sustainability arena. And they come from the constituencies of investors, labor, civil society, obviously companies, and also academics and other professionals that provide services around sustainability reporting. And we've seen the network grow exponentially over the years. In the beginning, we had only a couple of comments on the guidelines. When I joined GRI in 2006, we had maybe 200 or 300 comments during a public comment. For the last iteration of the guidelines, we dealt with more than 2,000 submissions just on the text of the changes of the guidelines. So we've come a long way in establishing a network that has actually a vested interest in developing these guidelines forward. When it comes to uptake of GRI-based sustainability reporting, we're looking at about 3,000 organizations according to our internal counting approach that apply the guidelines and publicly state that they do so. There are many more that apply the guidelines to inspire their sustainability reporting. And we do expect the number to increase quite rapidly over the coming years, in particular also with a couple of regulatory environment changes that are kicking in the coming years. About 78% of the top 100 companies in the 41 leading economies in the world report based on the GRI standard, and that is the publicly listed companies predominantly. When you look at the Fortune Global 500, 82% of the top 250 report based on the GRI standard nowadays. What we see is that policy has played a major role in popularizing the concept of reporting on sustainability performance, so economic, environmental, and social impacts of an organization. Right now, in 45 countries around the globe, you have regulation in place, regulation of some kind, or initiatives that promote non-financial disclosure of corporate entities. 72% of these regulatory approaches are mandatory in nature, and they really range from very single-issue-focused initiatives to broad-based support for ESG or sustainability reporting. And we see more of that happening around the globe at the moment. State-owned enterprises are a particular focus of these initiatives. So states decide to regulate non-financial disclosure of those entities that they hold major stakes in. Also with sustainability, sustainability-focused listing requirements of stock exchanges, we have seen a lot of experiments around the globe. You have several stock exchanges that have included listing requirements for governance, but also environmental, social issues. And to be listed on these exchanges, corporate entities have to disclose information. There are several jurisdictions also where report or explain approach is followed. So it is, organizations are free to disclose non-financial information or not, but if they don't do so, they have to explain why they've chosen not to do so. Out of the initiatives that I've been mentioning, 55 reference the GRI standard directly and refer either as one of many or actually require organizations to report based out of the GRI standard. GRI has developed over the years, and we are actually now, after about 15 years of existence, we are moving to a new governance structure, which resembles, I think, in part, processes and procedures that you have in place for many years. So we have a separate standard setting function going forward, global sustainability standards board, an oversight committee that basically provides checks and balances on whether due process is applied, and obviously also an independent nomination function as part of this new governance structure. GRI always had a due process and a very public and transparent way of developing the standard, but this is maybe also the next step for us to become even more mature in what we do around standard development. And this structure is currently in the making. By the mid of the year, this will be in place, and we will work by that. It has several features that will sound familiar to you. There is an organizational firewall that divides all standard-setting activities from the other activities of the organization. The separation of governance that I alluded to. The multi-stakeholder principle has been written into all constitutional documents as one of the key credentials of how we want to develop standards going forward. We have strengthened the due process protocol, looking at other standard setters, but also listening to the feedback of our stakeholders over the years. And we're working on establishing an independent funding base for the standard setting. Last but not least, all our meetings are similar to the ones that you hold public, except for the administrative discussions, and they will be recorded and be available on our website. Coming to the framework itself, GRI has set out a framework from the start that is based on reporting principles, something that is very familiar to you, in particular those that that relate to defining report quality. Although they come sometimes with slightly different names, they have similar contents than what you have established in financial reporting. We also have a set of principles that focus on defining report content. We handle the terminology in a very similar way. We have a materiality principle, and we also look at relevant issues that become relevant for reporting exercises. The principles, and I think, have a couple of unique components, a sustainability context principle, which requires organizations to look at their own performance in context of a broader sustainability question, and also stakeholder inclusiveness, and that is that the report, and I think that's one of the fundamental differences of non-financial reporting exercise based on GRI, addresses the needs of several different stakeholder groups. So civil society, investors, alongside with also internal audiences that are oftentimes heavy users of non-financial reporting information. The standard further features general standard disclosures on strategy and analysis, the organizational profile, process by which content is derived, and also then governance and ethics and integrity. And these are standard disclosures that are reported by all organizations that report based on the GRI standard. And we have specific standard disclosures in 47 issue areas at the moment. We divide between a disclosure on management approach and specific indicators in the areas of economic, environmental, and social performance. And not all organizations will report on all these disclosures at any point in time. They are asked to apply the materiality principle and then focus on those areas where they have the most material impacts. A couple of examples of disclosures. So from the very well-known sustainability issues like greenhouse gas emissions to investment decisions and agreements and human rights related questions that are considered in reaching these agreements, as well as corruption related disclosures. You have a range of social and environmental issues that are covered with quite some depths. And what we see in recent years is that all of these individual issue areas develop their own life, so to say. So many new methodologies, accounting methodologies, and also public information requests in all the different issue areas that we try to work into our standard. That brings me to the context in which we operate. And you've had, I think, at your last meeting, a presentation by the Integrated Reporting Council. And that is an organization that GRI has co-founded. We see the future of corporate reporting with a strong link between non-financial and financial reporting. This has become, as referenced earlier, regulatory reality in quite a few countries already. And we see that this will be the direction in that we want to work towards too. Also bringing the non-financial reporting standards up to a quality level that they can be applied across the board and can be referenced in these regulatory requirements. Non-financial reporting based on GRI also serves a very important function in reporting out on normative expectations that are formulated in the international domain, the OECD multinational guidelines, for example, that many companies that operate internationally have adopted. They don't have a reporting mechanism themselves, but the GRI guidelines are written in a way that they can be used to report on the implementation of this normative guideline. In a similar vein, you have different standards coming from the ISO that can be reported on using GRI disclosures, and also other performance standards around developed by multilateral organizations and international organizations like the IFC. In this context, what we're trying to do is to establish those reference points for our work that seem to be generally accepted and considered best practice, and this is for us a criteria to start referencing them in our standard. Going forward, what we see is under the umbrella of the integrated reporting discussion, we want to contribute to a very a strong element of ESG disclosure of corporate reporting in the future. And we believe that the risk and opportunities related to non-financial issues should become a key part of corporate disclosure in the not-so-distant future. And I think this is where we spend most of our time also looking at our standard and how this can be a part of the solution of this future reporting landscape. When it comes to GRI's approach and how we work over the coming years, everything we do is rooted in the development of the sustainability reporting standards. But we have different activities that we pursue. We support policy discussions around the globe on sustainability reporting. We have a whole range of products and services that support more reporting and also the, try to enhance the quality of reporting. I referenced, for example, our training network around the globe. We have discussion about beyond reports and how to use the information that is generated by the reporting exercise through different means in internal and external decision-making processes. And last but not least, there is also a pillar where we look at innovation and innovation in reporting mechanisms themselves, but also I think this is where you have discussion about what is the future of corporate reporting and how can we blend in what GI and others have developed in sustainability reporting with the wider corporate reporting effort. I want to leave that at that with my remarks, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Very useful, both in understanding the development of GRI. I was going to use the word invasiveness, but that's a derogatory word, so I probably shouldn't use that. But the amount that it is actually used globally obviously is very high, but also your comments around how it fits into the wider corporate reporting, which is probably from our perspective in terms of strategic thinking, it's how we fit into, as well as how you fit into that global corporate reporting that we need to think about going forward. So any questions or comments, first of all, directly of Bastien, but also in particular around how people see that, in fact, we can sit in with GRI, if at all, in terms of that overall corporate reporting. Anne.
Thank you, and congratulations on the work. It's impressive, and we were reflecting with Michelle Prada earlier how IASB has made extraordinary strides, but there's this parallel area of work which for big investors like CalPERS, who I work for, we see these as parallel but equally very important. So my question is, what are the simple things that could be done to improve the connection? We're very pleased there's this MOU, that's terrific. But from an investor point of view, one of our, just a simple thing, is timing. We go to annual general meetings, we cast our votes, and often we don't have the GRI report in hand, we only have the financial report. So what could we do that's easy? There's big stuff to do, but I'm sure there are some easy things to do where having investor attention on this will actually accelerate management interest, and I don't think it displaces other legitimate users of the information. What are your thoughts? What could we do on the investor side to help?
Well, I think for the timeliness and availability of information, what we've seen is that sustainability reporting exercises are usually something that move in parallel with financial reporting efforts in the organizations, but they don't have a due date like the financial reporting exercise, and especially later in the process, they get sidetracked a bit. And usually, we have a 2-3, sometimes 4 months delay in issuing non-financial information. I think integrated reporting and some of the leaders in that field, they bring this together now in issuing one report. And I think this is certainly where we want this to develop to. What we can do about it, I think, is between the organizations, but also from an investor side, the request to make information available at the same time, as early as possible. And also, I think with many corporate audiences, the GI report or sustainability report is something where they're not sure whether there is actually a followership among investors. I think if they had a clearer signal from the market that there is interest in having not financial information and non-financial information available at the same time to form opinions and be part of discussions at annual meetings and other things, I think that would be very helpful. And I think in my conversations, the signal is not that clear for many of the reporters that follow the GRI standard.
Can I come back on that? One reason investors aren't interested is they don't understand it and they don't know what's there. So would you consider a recommendation to your signatories that they present the information for discussion at the AGM? I mean, not for a vote or into the formal regulatory reporting, but I think if investors started to see the material, they could begin to understand its value. And it's chicken and egg. I don't know which comes first, but they don't know what they don't know. We don't know what we don't know. So would you consider something like that?
Yeah, I think that would be certainly a strong signal, and it has not been articulated to our membership from the investor side. No.
Interesting comments, though, and I'm going to, in terms of, you're saying that 78% of companies or listed companies in 20 countries report under it. So who is driving that reporting if it's not the investors? And I will use as an anecdote one of the companies that I'm a director of in New Zealand, and I don't know that much about GRI, but we report in our annual report, the financial statements, and immediately afterwards is the audited GRI report. And so that goes to, so somehow they've managed to do it within the timing. It's produced at the same time as the financial report and goes out in the annual report. So it's interesting. And having said that, as a director, I ask the question, who wants this? Because I don't actually see the investors asking for it, but management have decided that it's a good thing to do, so they do it. Sorry, there was sort of a question in there as to how come you're doing 78% if investors are not driving that? Who is driving it?
I think investors are driving this, and they put requests forward in individual conversations with organizations. But it is really a mix. The GI issues the standard that has become probably the leading one globally. And for all organizations that are looking around for a reference point, they arrive at this standard. And it has been primarily internal drivers, I think, as you described initially. But we see more and more of the information requests are also coming from those that aggregate corporate information for investors. So when you look at the larger entities that do this type of work, Bloomberg, Thomson Reuters, and others, all of them have information requests to companies that are formulated based on the GRI standard. And I think this brings us closer together.
Okay, sorry, that was very naughty. I asked a question. Paul.
Thanks, Joanna. Quick question for you. On the one of the slides, you had the context page where there were a number of other organisations listed. And it probably links into the comment you just made around the GRI being the leading reporting standards. My question is, and this is probably an education session as well, or educational question, do you see the GRI with some of these other organisations like the IIRC, the SASB, as in competition or working complementary? I.e., is there likely to be somebody who comes out ahead, or is there room for all other parties to operate in the same space?
No, we don't look at IRC or SASB as competition. They have a very special focus in what they do. IRC's framework is predominantly geared towards investors and also bringing together financial and non-financial reporting, while we focus on the non-financial reporting aspects and also on the disclosures. It's a principle-based framework which is underwritten with quite some detail in terms of disclosures and requirements. So it's different in nature when it comes to the IRC and the work that the IRC is doing in promoting integrated reporting. And we are founding member of this institution, and we're contributing to it. We see that this can be part of the answer to the future corporate reporting question. With SASB, that's a development that is focused on the U.S. at the moment, focused on SEC companies that have to fulfill SEC requirements, publicly listed companies, and they're also focusing on a particular subset of the issues that GI is looking at. It is something that is probably very helpful for the market in the U.S. And to get a larger group of companies interested in reporting on non-financial issues. But we don't see an immediate competition between the two, because you could still use the GI framework with the sector disclosures and the guidance that SASB is developing.
Waiku?
You know, in your speech, I found you interchangeably use sustainability reporting and non-financial. Is it intentionally to do so, or you are not so clear what your principles covered?
I think when the guidelines that we provide are called sustainability reporting guidelines, we develop sustainability reporting standards. What most people don't know that it is includes matters like ethics and integrity, corruption, and governance. We have some 40 disclosures in these issue areas, and I think this is a reason why we use these references interchangeably. It is in our public presentations that you find on our website. We use the term sustainability reporting. We don't really see a difference. It's the same for us.
That's a following question. Then what's your identity?
Sorry, can you?
Very similar to a question from Paul. What's your identity belong to you? For example, I can see corporate governance related, and there are some other organization also promulgate something national level, international, and in some other area too.
Mm-hmm. I think what is unique about what GI is providing is the detailed disclosure guidance on the different issue areas in economic, environmental, and social space. This is something that is not provided in a similar fashion by any other organization, at least not with the global reach.
We might come back to the overall, how it all fits together, depending on other questions that come through. Lothar.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to come back to the overall so-and-so, because that was my question. Phrasing it maybe a little bit differently, what's the aim of GRI reporting? Why do you think companies should do this reporting, which then would give a basis of what should be in it, which, you know, again, is relating to the question just before, because it's a broad range, and who is it for? If just to get your view, I mean, in my bank, I actually established a sustainability research in my equity department, and I had investors who were looking for this, and I linked it with the financial reporting, but still I would like to hear from you how you would define yourself in that sense, you know.
Well, I think at the basis, we believe that transparency on non-financial impacts of companies serves dual purposes. First of all, there are all kinds of improvements that can be made towards a more sustainable future, and that's financial and also sustainable development at large, through being more transparent. It starts all kinds of discussions internally, many lessons to be learned through these processes. Beyond that, there are clear, articulated requests for more information by corporate entities about their performance in the different issue areas. What we see is that it is oftentimes coming from different issue-level organizations, as well as investors. And what we try to provide is actually something that responds to the needs, so a catalog of disclosures that responds to the needs of this wide ranging audience. So we will always have civil society organizations. We have the labor unions. We have investors, and they come together to formulate what is their information request for a particular industry or for all organizations. And what we see is that there is quite some nuance in what they expect depending on region, and we try to bring that back into a global framework. In terms of where we see this developing is, what we want to maintain is the multi-stakeholder focus. We believe that to be complete in identifying the non-financial impacts of an organization and providing an account of it, we will not be able to focus just on one of the interest groups. It is actually very helpful to have these different interest groups articulate their information needs throughout our processes.
Okay, and I'm not sure who actually it is that's put their, is it Ton, who's got their flag up?
Thank you. I have a small question about the slide, which is still on the screen. It's about the GRI's approach, and it says that more reporting and better reports. More is not always better. And in view of the disclosure overload debate we have, I was wondering why this is mentioned this way in the approach of GRIs.
Well, what I've shown is that there has been quite some uptake in the overall numbers of GRI-based reports in recent years, and we have to ensure that the standard actually is applied to a sufficient quality, and this is where the better reports comes in. So the quality of reporting is something that we're trying to address through training activities, through services we provide, but also through the interpretation that we offer for the standards. And it's an area that develops quite quickly for many of the things that we cover. And we're trying to stay up to speed with these developments. And what we see is just the number of having 2,000 or 3,000is in itself probably insufficient. What we need is 2,000 or 3,000 quality reports. And this is where we focus part of our work.
More reporting, you mean that more issuers use
yes.
these
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
reports. Okay. Yeah. But how do you make sure that that is what is reported by companies on sustainability based on your guidelines does not contribute to the overload, disclosure overload issue? Because that's an issue in corporate reporting at the moment.
Okay. Well, I think the most recent version of the guidelines lays a much stronger focus on defining report content, to sort through the whole list of things you can potentially report and really focus on these things that where the organization has the most material impacts. And what we see now, we have about 1,000 organizations using this new version of the standard that was introduced in 2013. What we see is that the reports become much more focused and fewer disclosures overall are reported, but oftentimes with a greater detail. And I think this is where we want to redirect this development a bit. So it's not trying to cover all things and the whole catalog of disclosures, which amount to more than 100 in the GRI guidelines, but really pick those issue areas where there are material impacts.
Like the message about risk disclosures, mention the risks that are really relevant to your company instead of all possible kind of.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Goro.
Thank you. But the first of First of all, I want to clarify your slide on policy on stability reporting. Yes, that the you told us that the major driver of this, you know, the wider spread of this GRI is investors, but the it looks like this. First of all, this sustainable reporting is the same thing as GRI or not?
Well, it not in all cases. I think the majority of sustainability reports that are issued are based on the GRI standard. And what's referred to on this slide is really initiatives around sustainability reporting, not GRI specific necessarily.
So that the, you know, this table, this chart says that the, I see that the you know, major driver for the spread of sustainability reporting is rather that the regulators are mandatory than that the investors. So that the how, yeah, I simply do not understand how can you identify as that the your driver is investors. Maybe that the I would say social responsibility, social SRI type investors might be your driver, but still I think that I'm afraid that the SRI is just represent part of the investor community.
Yes, I would agree that there is a portion of the overall investor community that has an interest in this data at this point in time. We believe that more could probably take better decisions based on this information. And yes, also the regulatory efforts that are in place in different jurisdictions, they are fueled by different requests. Sometimes it is by investors, sometimes it is other parts of society that want access to this information. So I think the complete picture is a mix of these different drivers.
Thank you. I have another question. Broader picture. That the, it is remarkable that your growth, the GRI growth in terms of the you know the number of the companies which are using GRI, but the although your success is so impressive, but what do you see is your challenge or threat to your you know this reporting? You said that the integrated reporting is not your you know the competition, but so that I thought that integrated reporting was your threat or the competition, but you are denying that. So that do you see any challenge to your project or that the initiative?
Well, I think what we believe, we are not creating the standard just for the purpose of advancing the goals of this organization. We believe that if non-financial information becomes available through corporate reporting exercise, this is the end goal. This is what we want to achieve. Whether in 20 years' time this is the IRC or another organization promoting integrated reporting for corporate entities and bringing this all together, that will be very much, I think, a realization of what we strive for. And in that sense, we don't see it as competition. In the immediate future, what we see, obviously, is that companies have restrictions on resources that they can make available for reporting efforts. The overload that was referenced earlier, and companies will choose between the different frameworks. And what we believe is that with what our offering disclosures on a very detailed level, that we have a contribution to be made in that discussion.
Anne,
thank you. From Anne's question and your response, I understood that sometimes the GRI report is published a couple of weeks or even a couple of months later. Now, the window between the two reports provides an excellent opportunity to study the value relevance of both reports. Do you have evidence that there are financial analysts that have changed their recommendation with respect to certain companies after the GRI report was issued, and that they altered their views on a company because of the GRI report, and they didn't do that based on the financial statements that were published earlier. So do you have any evidence empirically on the incremental value of the GRI report? That's just a question. Yeah.
And probably not very easy for me to answer. There's very little scientific research into this issue area. There's lots of anecdotal evidence, I think, with information becoming available through processes based on the GRI standard that then lead to decision of investors. But what we see with major issues that that concern the performance of corporate entities that will change the decision of investors, they oftentimes become available actually when they happen. So in non-financials, if there is an accident in one of the supplier factories or so, this leads to immediate repositioning of investors. So they don't necessarily wait for the GRI report to have that news and information. At the same time, what the GRI report certainly serves for is a summary of the performance over a certain time period, and it is used as such to form decisions. And actually, when you look at the ESG screening criteria of again, this SRI community, oftentimes the question whether or not a GRI report is issued in the first place is already a cutoff for the decision-making in their procedures.
Thank you. Mary?
Sebastian, one of the issues that we were discussing this morning in respect of I4S was consistency of application and, you know, quality of reporting. Just a question for you. Can you give us any information about how consistency of application of your standards is tested, considered either by your organization or by others, and kind of what's the enforcement mechanism, if any, around it?
So GRI itself is not enforcing the consistency. We have a mechanism in place as part of our standards, which we call the in accordance criteria. So you can declare in accordance with the standard at different levels. And we do promote assurance as one of the ways of forcing more consistency in application of the standard. So it is not a must, it's not a requirement when you apply the GRI standard to have an assurance engagement, but we do recommend that, and we do see a future of this industry also for non-financial reporting. And what's very much needed is a more streamlined approach. So right now there are many different approaches out when it comes to assurance of GRI-based sustainability reports. And we do hope that there is some consolidation and an agreement of what constitutes good assurance practice for sustainability reporting. That would drive, hopefully, this consistency also in application of the standard.
Thank you. Holger.
Yeah, my question was similar to the question of Anne, whether there's any reliable independent evidence on the effects, because I think it's nice to have this quality label and all the buzzwords, but you know, whether there's really an effect on people's behavior and on behavior of companies, that's a core issue. And another thought I want to share is, if I look into several companies which I follow and I see who is preparing the reports, it's typically someone based in public relations and not in financial accounting or communications or investor relations. So it seems to be very much an instrument for public perception management of stakeholders. I want to share a second story. My university is based in Baden-Württemberg, where we, a few years ago, for the first time, got a green government. One of the first emails we received was, who is doing sustainability research? So there was a clear demand from the political side to cover the topic. So I think you know, that will also be probably a driver of adopting your standard, this political demand. Do you have any comment on those observations? Is that in line what you observe, or?
Yes, I think first of all for the political demand, yes, that is clearly there, and all these different initiatives that I referenced earlier, they speak for that. I think when it comes to the question who is issuing the report and which function in the organization is doing that, probably if you go back 10, 15 years, most of these non-financial sustainability reports were issued by the PR or communications department. When you look at it now, I think for almost all of the long-term reporters, they have focus teams and that do just this. They issue their sustainability report, their combined report, their integrated report. And these are people with specific expertise in the issue areas and oftentimes also growing teams within. So I think that you see a specialization of that function, but where we are coming from clearly, this is what you have described. And I think in particular also in early stages of reporting, so first-time reporters, oftentimes the function that puts the report together is a communications function, yes.
Thank you. Well, I have to say something from the preparer's point of view. Well, well, actually, as a preparer, we have to prepare lots of disclosure materials, actually. So, I think that non-financial information should not be standardized and, of course, should not be audited. So, please tell me if you have any idea that this kind of reporting should be audited or not.
Well, we promote the idea of having assurance engagement as part of the reporting exercise. It's not a requirement at the current moment, and I don't expect that it will be in the foreseeable future, but we do believe that it can play a role in making the information more reliable and also enable external parties to form decisions based on that information. So yes, we do see a role for this in non-financial reporting.
So this kind of information or this kind of reporting standard could be very useful as a reference from the company's point of view, but it's not appropriate to this kind of reporting should be enforceable.
Okay,
it's far from far from things we have to do.
Okay, we will continue. Oh, Steve, you've taken yours down. Now, Lota, you've had your go, so I'm going to come back to you at the end. I presume you've still got it up. GS, you've taken yours down as well. Roxana.
Very short question. One, it's mentioned on this slide that actually there are 180 regulations, and I know in Europe we do have something in the directive about non-financial information. How much of the content of your guidelines is in general taken already by local regulatory initiative? That is the first question. Like 30%, one third, half of them, or I don't know, something like that. And second question, I don't necessarily see the link between non-financial and financial in the sense that for financial reporting, there is a certain necessity of having regular information, and usually we have quarterly information for the big companies at least. Do you have any evidence of what is the needed frequency of information in this area?
I think for the first question and the regulation, I think the predominant part of the content that we offer in terms of disclosure requirements is not covered by regulation specifically. So there are some initiatives that endorse and welcome non-financial reporting as a concept or sustainability reporting as a concept, and they are not specific which issue areas need to be covered. And then there are more specific requests like the EU directive that you're referring to, where certain issue areas are singled out. And then there are some where the GI standard is referenced directly, and then you would indeed imply the full standard. So there's a range of things, I think. The second question, whether there is any evidence for the need of having this information on a regular basis, I think I can only go back to my earlier comments. There are different user groups for this, and I think also what we've seen that institutionalizing it in organizations as a reporting process is the best way of producing information that is reliable. If it is just ad hoc, unstandardized information that becomes available after the fact, that is not necessarily what the different user groups are looking for. And in particular also you see in non-financial disclosure a strong focus on now being prepared to deal with certain issues and signaling this preparedness, and that needs to be standardized, otherwise these approaches cannot be compared easily.
A couple of last questions. You do very well, Bastian, in responding to all of those. Vanya. Is it Vanya? Yeah.
Thank you. I just want to disagree with Hideki about the necessity of assurance, because what I think has been contributing for the lack of use of non-financial information by investors is that for many years it was made as a publicity piece, not exactly as an information about the company. So in many occasions, the report was much more a marketing piece than a corporate reporting. And so it lacks reliability. So the independent audit to this kind of information would be essential. And it is not just my opinion. IWASB has put the auditing for integrated reporting in its plan beginning 2016. And last year, it decided to anticipate it, and a working group was created in order to work on that, because it is something very important. I'm an accountant, and I've been preparing corporate reporting for many, many, many years. But I'm humble enough to understand that the market is not satisfied with just financial information nowadays. It wants more. It wants to have access to non-financial information with the same level of quality that we have nowadays, thanks to IFRS, to the financial information part.
Thanks, Vanya. Lothar.
Thanks for having me again. I have two last more specific questions to Bastian. The one is on consistency, which was discussed several times. Of course, are you working with the SRI research companies, which actually go to the firms and check their, you know, environmental and the whole thing standards? I mean, those we used as a basis for our SRI research. And the second question is on investors. Our pitch was always, I mean, there's of course an established group of financial investors who are doing SRI investment, and that's how they're presenting themselves. But their main argument was always that in the long run, of course, if you do, if you're a good citizen and so on, your financial profit should also be better than if you're not. Unfortunately, that never came out in the numbers. The no good SRI companies performed as good as the others, more or less. So my question is, I haven't checked that for a while, has that changed? And if it hasn't changed, are you really so optimistic to get more investors to actually pay attention? Because if you cannot prove it has, even in the long term, a financial impact, then I thought it might be difficult.
So I think for the first question, how we engage the SRI community, we run public comment processes for the development of the standard, and we have expert working groups in which we develop the contents, and the SRI community has been represented in these both mechanisms over the last years. We also engage with them on a more regular basis to understand better how they compile information and by which methods they do so, and what also drives their information requests, because that's key for us to then write this up in a way that it becomes a disclosure also for a wider range of stakeholders. For the second question, the link between long-term financial performance and being able to respond to transparency requirements or voluntary standards on non-financial reporting. There's a lot of research in this space, and particularly the Harvard University has issued a couple of research pieces over the last years where they're trying to relate those that are more transparent on non-financial issues and take measures to address non-financial impacts see whether they outperform a benchmark. And there is some evidence for that, but I think we're still looking for that a much wider base in the scientific research. And the investor community also, and in particular the SRI community, has of course research that promote their case on how they look at this. But I think there's much more research that needs to happen in this. And it would also be clearly something that would help the positioning of GI with the investor community as a whole if we had this evidence sitting on the shelf and we would just reference that in all conversations. It doesn't exist like this.
Apologies, Giath. I thought you'd put yours down. I didn't. You think you've put it back up again. So, yes, please.
Thanks a lot. Something that didn't come clear to me from the presentation, maybe it was there, I missed it, I apologize for that. But the question in my mind is, who is your audience? I think this is very critical. I mean, for financial reporting, for any corporations, we have three broad categories. We have the investors, consumers, and public at large. The audience for financial reporting is clearly investors, the primary audience. Now, what's not clear to me is who is the primary audience for your report? It's not the investors, clearly. Probably not the consumers as well. I mean, some, but it's probably the public at large, the public policy. And that by itself creates tensions because you have two different audiences, and then the political process comes in that. So all of these things poses difficult questions about integrate the whole thing together. It seems to be probably quite a difficult task.
It is indeed true that we have and serve with the reporting multiple audiences. So we investors are part of it, but equally civil society and others. I think there's also a very strong demand for this type of information from internal audiences in the organizations currently. When it comes to the future of corporate reporting, the question is whether these multiple audiences are really a hurdle to combining these efforts going forward, because I think that there is a different, what we've seen with corporate reporting efforts for the issues that we are covering is that oftentimes the blend, the different types of interest groups that come together and formulate information requests to organizations, that this leads actually to the full picture. And it is not investors exclusively that have a good understanding of these issue areas. They profit a lot from having civil society organization requesting information and vice versa. And I think what we believe, and this is also why it's institutionalized in our process, is that we have to bring all these constituencies together to develop the standard, but also to enable them to use the standard going forward. So we want to maintain the different user groups. How we do that and whether we need to compartmentalize the standard in a way that there are certain aspects that are more relevant for certain activities like an investor-focused integrated report, that might be a discussion for the future for us. Yep.
Okay, thank you. And I have promised Hans the last word. I'm not sure that that's a good idea. I'm going to try and sum up
after Hartz, I'm umming and ahhing as to which way to do it. I'm going to let you speak, and then I will sum up.
Not the last word, but the last question. I was really impressed by how you handled all our very difficult questions, Bastian. I have a very simple one to end with, and I hope that Michel will listen very carefully to the answer, which is Amsterdam a good location for an international standard setter?
Well, this is the one question that I will probably leave unanswered. In personal reflection, yes, it is. It's a beautiful city, and it's has been a great time there. But the main reason that we're based there is probably the connection, and
My serious question.
All right, Hartz. I think Michel heard. I think Heath might think Paris might be a better place. However, I think, Bastian, thank you very much. You did, Hans actually said, you handled those very difficult and challenging questions, I think, from a bunch of accounting financial reporting standard setters, quizzing you on the relevance and can you meet the high standards that we have, I think was a general sort of undercurrent of some of the questions. And so thank you for responding to those and acknowledging that you're, if you like, aspiring and you think you're getting there, and the vexed issue of assurance or otherwise. I think what it's done is giving us, or certainly from my perspective, an understanding, an education as to where GRI is at. I think that from our perspective, in terms of our role of advising the trustees and the ISB, I think, if you like, the next step we probably have not been dealt with here. And in some ways, I want to ask Hans and Ian and Michelle, but I think now is probably not the right time, quite where, and I think what we're grappling with is where we fit within the overall corporate reporting going forward, as you are, and how the relationship between non-financial and financial should and could happen. As I said, one particular example in my jurisdiction is, you know, those two are released together, whether that is the way of the future, and who actually then leads that bringing it together. I think that's important as to who has the role there, and whether, probably because it's been a standard setter for longer than anybody else, whether in fact the ISB or the foundation actually takes a lead role of bringing integrated reporting together and using our process. I mean, who knows? But I think that's the question that we all need to grapple with. So I think certainly, and that's me summing up from my perspective in terms of the education. It's been extremely useful. I think that you have answered appropriately, well, appropriately is the wrong word, but you have answered the questions that we have asked you, and I think we now need to go away and think, well, from our role as the council, where do we take that information? So thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity again, and have a good afternoon.